Hello, you are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 FM. This is Corinne Motokaitis, host of How She Really Does It, where inspiration and possibility meet. I continue my search for answers to improve our lives from people who have spent their lives learning, growing, and understanding. On How She Really Does It, I bring guests onto the show to really dive into issues to help inform, inspire, and empower you towards a better life. I love hearing listeners' comments about shows or questions for upcoming guests. You can email me by going to my website, www.howshereallydoesit.com, to send me an email. And you can also find my Facebook and Twitter links, as well as the signups for my weekly newsletter. Past shows are available on our website or from iTunes. Ariane de Bonvoisin, my friend and author of The First 30 Days, Your Guide to Any Change, and her website is first30days.com, is back with us. Ariane is a change expert who has personally lived it to teach it. She climbed the very tall successful ladder as a Stanford MBA grad working for Time Warner in New York and controlled a $500 million digital media venture capital fund. She took the leap to her inner guidance and wrote her book, as well as started her website, first30days.com. Ariane, hello and welcome.
Hello, Corinne. Lovely to be back on your show. I love what you do.
Well, thank you very much, and it's likewise. So you were in USA Today a couple weeks ago talking about, you know, taking the leap, and you talked about your own personal journey. And so my question to you, especially with all the doom and gloom that, you know, that tends to be out there, is that, is it really possible to change your job and have a good life?
Mm-hmm. I love that question. You know, I think a lot of us are very stuck right now in sort of this either-or mentality. And I find people who are really succeeding and are getting sort of closer to what it is they want are kind of looking at the world through an and perspective. So you can have a job full of meaning and make money. You can, you know, be a mother and have a terrific job. You can, you know, leave a job even though the economy is crazy and it's not sort of this either-or filter that we keep sort of putting on ourselves. You can stay in a job and pursue your dream. You know, mm-hmm. You don't have to actually leave a job right now. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are in the, oh my God, well, if I hate my job, then obviously I've got to leave it. And sometimes it's just sort of realigning yourself to, well, what do I really want to do? And start doing that as well, not instead of.
Mm-hmm. And for you to make this leap, because you had climbed a very tall ladder, and you know, were engaged to, if I remember correctly, one of the Sexiest Men of People magazine. And so, you know, you kind of on the outside looked like you had this perfect life. You were successful in this career. You had, you know, the man on your arms. You're living in New York City. But there was an inner voice.
Yeah, I mean, so here's what happened. You know, I sort of went the safe route. I sort of did what was expected. I studied what was expected, and then I got the jobs I thought I should do, and I never really got sort of fully engaged into them. I never really sort of went, well, this is really what I love and what I want to be doing with my life. And I talk about what I call the inner microphone, because for years, you know, it doesn't happen instantly, not for me either. For years, I would wake up in my bed in New York City, and this little voice would wake me up and go, Ariane, you're in the wrong job. And then it would go, Ariane, you're sleeping with the wrong guy. Mm-hmm. And I'd have these two voices that were just kind of running the show all the time. And the only way for me to survive, Corinne, was for me to turn that microphone off. So I'd turn the personal one and the professional one off, and then I'd go ahead with my day and with my relationship. Because for me, as for most people, there's some sort of story or excuse or belief that's in the way of actually going, I could actually change my job, or I could actually leave this relationship and still feel safe and loved and everything else we think we won't feel.
Mm-hmm.
And the excuses, you know, there are only so many. I'm too old
mm-hmm.
to change jobs, to pursue my dream, to get remarried, whatever it might be. I'm too young is another one right now where, you know, we've got a whole generation of people coming through who don't want to go take the boring job just because their parents are telling them to. It's not my nature. So for me, I'd always been told I was a business person, you know, tattooed on my forehead. I'd never been told I was creative or that I could write or that I could speak or that I could, you know, do anything that wasn't just business. Someone's going to disapprove. That's a big one for people when they start thinking about making a change. And the reality is, this is the quality of a change optimist. They do not ask for permission and they do not seek approval because you're not going to get it. Believe me, when I left my big, powerful job here and I broke off the relationship, everyone that was close to me was not really up for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not where I went to get sort of my support. And we can talk about people around you when you go through change. So there's only, you know, it's going to be painful. It's going to cost money. It's going to take time. It's going to be too hard. I'm not intelligent enough. So the only thing that's in between you and making the change that you really want is some story that you're hooked on that
mm-hmm.
you believe is true.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to unhook it is, hey, you've got to know what your story is. A lot of people, they don't even know why they're stuck. So what's your story?
Yes.
And then I go, well, who would you be without that story?
Uh-huh.
You've got to really investigate, where does that story come from? Why am I hanging on? Because your story is not a story. Your story is actually your excuse that's kind of holding. It's very convenient sometimes to be able to have that. So shine a light on it and go, well, is that really true? Is it really what's going on for me, or is that kind of what's holding me back from it? And I mean, my story. I mean, for me, I finally did get off the corporate ladder, and I didn't know what was next. And I think for most people, that period of not knowing, the period of uncertainty is so painful,
mm-hmm.
they're not willing to step into it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not willing to be single for a while. They're not willing to not know what the right job is next for a while. And yet everyone will say, you know, it's in those moments of not knowing and uncertainty that everything gets created. It's in the moments of darkness. I mean, look at a seed under the ground. The seed does not grow, you know, in perfect sunlight. The seed grows in the darkness. It has no idea what's going on. Same thing with a baby. You know, a baby is in total darkness for 9 months. You've got to not be scared of the I don't know phase,
mm-hmm.
the I haven't quite caught the next trapeze phase. Because the most extraordinary things happen during times of change and transition. The best of who you are shows up when you actually get through a change. It's not when everything's going great and it's stable in your life. And, you know, just to wrap the story up personally, so I sort of had one question for life, which was, okay, well, if I'm so off track with my life, show me what you want me to do. And I was very clear on one thing, Corinne, which is I knew the one thing that was missing. I didn't feel that I was making a difference, that my work mattered, that I had any meaning in what I was actually doing. And the thing that was missing with my partner was he and I had no spiritual connection. And I knew that was important for me. But I sort of made it okay for a couple of years. So we had this fun, exciting, sort of glamorous external life. And it was while I was traveling and while I was kind of being in this uncertainty period that I sort of started realizing that everyone I meet, you know, and everyone knows is either struggling with a life change. It could be a divorce, it could be a job change, it could be a health diagnosis, a financial issue. They're either secretly wanting to make a change. They want to go pursue that dream, write the book, open the bed and breakfast. They want to go back to school. They want to lose weight. They want to get off drugs, whatever it is. Or they're helping someone through a change. It could be a spouse, a parent, a child, a friend. And everyone hates change, finds change hard, resists change. And I just became obsessed with this question, how can I make change easier? Why is it that you, Corinne, are good at change and someone you know is really bad at it? Why do you initiate a change, pursue your dreams, start a radio show, start a website, and some people have dreamed of it and never do? And that's sort of, but I never kind of set out and go, I'm now going to be an author and I'm now going to be an entrepreneur and I'm now going to be a speaker. The thread that led me to it was an intention to give, to serve, to contribute, to help, to notice things, to give back, and then the other things kind of showed up. The hardest thing in change is you seeing yourself differently. Me to go from I'm a business person, investing, Wall Street, blah, 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 to I'm a self-help spiritual writer, I need to make the identity shift. No one's going to make that for me or tell me I am that. Do you see? That's the old change is an identity change.
So did you ever have regret from leaving, from leaping?
Well, not at all. Never, not once. Here's what I did have. Did I have moments of feeling alone? Of course I did, because change is an internal journey. And even though the change happens on the outside, what change really does is it invites you to go on the inside. Who are you? Why are you here? What's most important to you? What are you made of? How strong are you? Where's your resiliency? Where's your change muscle? Where's your faith? And that's an inner journey. And if you don't know yourself well and that's not where you hang out,
mm-hmm.
it can be quite frightening when you make, you know, contact with that inner voice because it starts talking.
Mm-hmm.
And you finally turn it back on. And, you know, when your inner voice and your outer life are in sync, there's tremendous peace that comes from that because you're not fighting yourself on anything.
Mm-hmm.
But did I regret the breakup? Not at all. I see it as a huge gift to sort of realign me with the sort of partner, soul partner, that I want to be with.
Mm-hmm.
And on the work side, I sort of, again, it was part of the journey. It wasn't the wrong thing. It wasn't, you know, I'd sort of gotten off track. It was exactly where I needed to be right now to be woken up.
Mm-hmm.
So I look around and sort of, you know, see people right now, I mean, who are in jobs, and you can tell someone who hates their job
mm-hmm.
in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, you know, the joy is gone. They walk around a little bit of sleep, and they're just trying to get through the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, it's sort of like my heart goes out to them because I know that place because I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And people look at me now and go, oh, my God, you got such a great life. And I'm like, oh, I was in jail for 10, 12 years
mm-hmm.
because I put myself there. And what we never realize is the door really is open. Your mind will scream and say, you know, but how are you going to make money? That's the easiest one. The mind screams because the mind is all about trying to make you stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another part of you that's just like you totally know without a shadow of doubt that you're going to be okay.
This is Corinne Motokaitis of How She Really Does It, and I'm talking with Ariane de Bonvoisin, author of The First 30 Days: Your Guide to Any, Your Guide to Making Any Change. Now, Ariane, do people ever say, well, of course, Ariane, it was easy for you to make the leap. You're successful. You have these contacts. You know, you had climbed a very tall ladder and reached it. And you know, you've lived this glamorous life. So you could. But how can I? I'm ordinary.
Oh, a lot of people say that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's another thing that I find people, we're always looking for one more excuse why we can't do it. So I'm like, I'm happy to be part of your excuse. It's not going to get you any closer to what you want, but if that's what people want to throw at me, that's great.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't, you know, for me, the thing that we need to do is we need to get clear on what it is that we really want and not spend the time on why you can't have it. And we are obsessed right now with finding the reasons and the excuses and the stories of why it's not possible. And I just invite people to kind of go, okay, well, if it was, you know, forget about your education, forget about your age, forget about all the things that you really think are in the way. Because I can give you, for every one of those excuses, I can give you at least a few people who have transcended those excuses.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, you really don't know what someone else has been through, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I say this very respectfully. People have no idea what I've been through. People don't know if I, you know, have been crying on the couch for the last 3 months. People
mm-hmm.
really don't know. And so when you look at someone and there's an appearance of, oh, everything is, you know, rosy and wonderful, I always invite people to go, you know what, you really, is that the truth that's being projected or not? Because we're all trying to project something, you know, that is not necessarily sort of what reality is.
Mm-hmm.
But what I say to people who, you know, are in a place of, well, it's easy for you,
mm-hmm.
I remind people that, you know, everyone has been through dozens and dozens of life changes. And somehow, even though this might be a new change for you, whether it's leaving a bad relationship, whether it's leaving a job that really isn't serving you, even though the change is new, you are not a brand new naked person to the change party. You've been to the change party before. You know how to be at the change party. There are things you did the last time. You know, relied on some great beliefs. There are some people that showed up to help you through another change. You took care of your health. You prayed more. You know, whatever it is for you, but you do have a change toolkit. And somehow when you show up in front of a new change, you're powerless because it appears new. But you are the combination of all the changes you've been through, made, witnessed, helped people with. And that's when you start accessing that inner strength again, that change muscle. You know, where is that for you? I can't flex your change muscle for you. And even though I look as if I have a strong change muscle, it's because, you know, life has thrown me some stuff and I'm like, I'm very aware that regardless of whatever change it is that's thrown at me, good ones, bad ones, I know that from any change, something good will come. That's my number one most powerful belief. From any change, something good will come. It's what I call the change guarantee. So even if someone's like, oh, I'm not quite sure I can do it, even if you started to make the smallest change in the direction of where joy is, where energy is, where wind in your sails is, you can know for sure that life shows up with you. Life is, I think, whenever a tough change shows up, life is constantly trying to get you back to what it is you really want, what you really love. Do you know that 80% of people who lost their job in the last 6 months hated their job?
Mm-hmm.
And people still feel they have a reason to be upset about it, as opposed to go, I actually hated my job. This is a real opportunity to kind of look at something and do something very different with my life.
Well, isn't it because they're scared of the unknown?
Of course. I mean, fear, you know. So in the book, what I did is I sort of went through, well, what are the principles of people who are good at change? Why is it that people are good at change? And the fourth principle in the book is what I call the change demons. And the change demons are all the emotions that show up at the change party, all the emotions that show up and can kind of wreak havoc on whatever change, including good changes. Sometimes people are like, I just became a mom and I'm a total mess, or I just got married and why am I not happy? So all change involves sort of a whole bunch of emotions. I could have written the whole book on the emotions. And the number one change demon is fear.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones that show up are doubt that there's more jobs, doubt that there's more lovers, doubt that there's more money. You know, people who are good at change look at life through a lens of abundance. There are more jobs. There is more money. There are more lovers. There are more homes to buy, to sell, etc. Impatience is another one. You know, you kind of want to speed through it. And so you jump into the wrong relationship because you don't want to be single. Or you take the first job offer that you get, even though it's not at all what it is you'd want to be doing. Or you buy something immediately, even though it doesn't feel quite right. Blame is another of the emotions that shows up very big during change. A lot of it is self-blame. How did I do that? How was I so stupid? How was I this? Or some people put a lot of external blame out. They blame, you know, the job and the boss and the lover and their parents and the city they live in and everything else. And blame never achieves anything. You know, if we're in blame, you know, we're actually much more in a place of stuckness than anything. And then the other two that show up a lot, especially for women, are guilt and shame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're ashamed we can't lose the weight. We're ashamed we can't, you know, finally say what we have been wanting to do for a long time. And every one of those, I mean, the most interesting part probably for me in researching the book and interviewing thousands of people going through change was that people who are good at change are very emotional. They're not rational, they're not logical, they're not analytical, they're not highly educated, they're not the smartest people, they don't have the perfect plan, they haven't been told how to get divorced or how to lose weight, but they really are very in tune with their emotion, and their emotions are not something they push down, they resist, they move away from, they hope and pray are going to go away. Their emotions are actually what starts giving them the fire to be able to change. So if fear is showing up, it's a good sign. If impatience is showing up, it's a good sign. People who are good at change are emotional creatures. They're not, oh, Ariane's so calm, she must have, you know, perfect analysis of how to do this. The emotions are what show up. I mean, I'll give you a little exercise that I personally do. Every single morning, just to be really practical, after I've done, you know, I meditate a little bit, gratitude, blah, 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 I basically check in with how I'm feeling. Not my to-do list, not my Facebook page. I check in with how I'm feeling before any of that other stuff starts coming through. And I go, so I'll give you an example. Let's say today I was like, oh, I have some anxiety showing up. Or let's say I have some fear showing up. But I do not say, oh, my God, I'm really anxious. Or, oh, my God, I'm really terrified about this day. So I look at the feeling. I put a word on it. I go, what is the feeling I'm feeling? A lot of the times you don't even know how you're feeling. All you know is you need 3 cups of coffee and a whole bunch of stuff to push away the feeling. So number one is name the feeling. Is it anxiety? Is it fear? Is it sadness? Is it grieving? Is it anger? What is it? Name it. And you turn it into an object. I have some anger showing up. I have some sadness showing up. So it's not you being completely out of control. Shine a light on it and go, welcome anger. What do you have for me? Or welcome fear. So it's not continuously pushed and shoved down, which is what most of us do. And if you keep pushing that emotion down, I guarantee you by 4 p.m., you will be eating brownies or something bad because you're trying to push the emotion down further. And so welcome it up, shine a light on it, and ask it, what's the message? What do you have for me? But we need to start making peace and friends with our emotions because they're not going away. And they don't go away for me, and I've been in, you know, doing what I do for years now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never about overcoming fear. It's about naming it. It's about understanding it. It's about welcoming it. It's about having it be there, but not have it take control. And it takes control when you push it down. The emotion that you are most resisting is the emotion that's ruling your life. The emotion you're most resisting is the emotion that's ruling your life. So if fear is what you're most resisting, you actually need to kind of look at it and start asking, and then go on the other side of it and detach and sort of look at it and kind of go, well, is it really true that this is what's going to happen? But Corinne, you know me. I mean, I've you know, been on the Today Show, Good Morning America. Of course fear shows up.
Mm-hmm.
You never overcome it. And I think people can look at it and go, you know, heart's racing, mouth's dry. You know, I've got my iPod on trying to calm myself down. And you're just as human. The only difference is I've decided to make something bigger than my fear, which is I must show up on the court and stop talking about what I want to do. I must give back. I must feel as if something bigger is coming through me. But if you must find something that's bigger than your fear. I mean, you know, you and I have spoken at the same conferences.
Mm-hmm.
When I get up on stage and I've spoken to, you know, groups even as big as 10,000 people, I must give back because the minute it's about me, my ego, looking good, getting approval, staying in control, that's when the fear and the ego takes over and goes, we got her. We totally got her. The minute I sort of go, this is about giving, it's about serving, it's about having something come through, it's about helping, suddenly I can kind of take a deep breath and go, whatever happens, I can't fail. Whatever happens, because it's about something else other than me.
And does it, when you do this and you let go of some of that fear, does it just help you go up and use your voice instead of going, who am I to be up here? Who am I to be on the Today Show? Who am I to be speaking to these thousands of women at these conferences?
I feel like I disidentify from myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like, it's like the Ariane's not really doing the work, you know, and it's, I mean, I love the title of your show, How She Really Does It, because what I would say to you in total honesty is, I don't feel I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel I'm the doer, but I'm so available to do the doing and to be used by something bigger than me that is going to flow through me and talk through me. And when, you know, someone asks me a question on TV and I don't get the question ahead of time, I feel something else is going to come through and give me the answer. And so my biggest work is to be so, you know, you can call it in the flow where just whether it's a musician or an athlete or a speaker or whatever work you're doing, even as a mom, you're in the flow, you actually, something else is coming through you. So Ariane's not doing the speaking. I'm prepared. I have a sense of what's coming. But sometimes the more empty I am, the more I can be filled up. You know, I mean, there's a great line in Avatar. Why was the guy picked? Because he was the most empty. He didn't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because he'd done the most studying, was the most ready and the most prepared. And the line goes something like, but, you know, when the more empty you are, the more we can actually fill you up. And I find life sometimes, you know, it's going to ask you to let go of things. And it could be a job, it could be a relationship, it could be friends, it could be, you know, money. It's going to ask you to let go of things so that you can be filled back up. But you're being filled up with things that are actually more in line for you. And sometimes we look at our plate, you know, and I always use the metaphor of the plate. So we all have a plate. You know, and some of us have a bit of career on there and a bit of money and a bit of finances, a bit of, you know, hobbies and health and relationships, kids, maybe religion, maybe a bit of spirituality sprinkled on top. And when life changes or when life asks you to change, something on the plate is either removed, taken away, added to it. And that's what kind of makes the plate a bit shaky. Suddenly the career is not on the plate anymore, and your plate starts feeling a little wobbly. Or then, you know, your birthday runs around or your New Year's comes around, and I look at your plate, you look at my plate, and I'm like, oh, I think I should add this on my plate. And we're always thinking about adding to the plate. How can I add more to the career, add more to the relationship, add. And change is hard for people because change is all about letting go.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about letting go. Even the good changes are about letting go of something. And what I say is, you know, how do you strengthen everything that's on your plate, whether it's your career, finances, blah, any of that, by strengthening the plate? It's not about tweaking the career or finding the three ways for better sex in the relationship or how to be a better parent. When you strengthen the plate, which is what holds your life together, it's what you rest in. It's where you get your safety. And most of us don't feel safe because we put our safety on what's on the plate.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to, and to me that's, you know, and it's a personal thing. For me that's, you know, what sort of practice do you do to strengthen your plate, which is your alone time, which is your maybe spiritual practice, which is you getting into your body and out of your head, taking care of your health, which is you self-nurturing, which is that strengthens your plate where no matter what's on the plate, off the plate, taken, added to, you are in a place of stability and safety.
This is Karim Motokaitis, and you're listening to How She Really Does It. My guest today is Ariane de Bonvoisin, author of First 30 Days, and she also has a website, first30days.com. Now, Ariane, because one of the things that I notice is that so often right now, everybody's kind of coming from this place of lack, or not everybody, but this is what we get inundated with in the messages in the media and the shows to kind of help dispel that. But this lack, it's like, oh, well, you better hold on to this job. You hate it, but, you know, you need that income to come in.
Yeah.
And do you feel, because when you talk about the plate metaphor, and that's the piece on the plate, and everybody's holding on to that, and when you're an employee, that is really, you know, you're at the mercy of, I hope my company makes it. I hope they don't lay me off. How can I save my job? To now you're an entrepreneur. Do you feel like you're more a creator?
You know, the abundance and the lack, I'm going to give you just a little piece of a statistic. I helped and coached a lot of people who'd lost their jobs last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave them sort of, you know, some instructions. And it wasn't, you know, fix your resume and do this and get your hair cut. And, you know, it was none of that. But I gave them one piece of information. And I said, until you find a job, you're not allowed to look at the news, hear the news, hear the radio, or read the newspaper. Nothing. There must be no input of lack into your life. So no one is telling you there's no jobs. No one is telling you people are getting laid off. You have no idea. You don't need to know how the markets did. Nothing. I said, until you get a job, you're not allowed to watch the news. Basically, within 3 months, every single one of these people have found a job. And I'm not taking any credit for it here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the minute you start feeding yourself with a different type of mental thoughts and food, that's when you start changing. If no one had told you it was so bad out there,
mm-hmm.
I do not watch the news.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch it because when you see fear,
mm-hmm.
you feel fear.
Mm-hmm.
When you read fear,
mm-hmm.
you feel fear.
Mm-hmm.
When you see lack, you feel lack. When you read lack, you feel lack. There is no boundary big enough for me than what I let into my mind and my space.
Mm-hmm.
And we let, you know, tragic love songs into our space for the first 2 hours of our day. We get up, turn the radio on, it's all, you know, bad news and, like, depressing love songs. And then we're surprised that we feel like hell. Be really, really mindful of what you are letting run the computer. Like,
mm-hmm.
what is it? Because that is something you can control. I mean, I never listen to the radio. I do listen to a couple of shows. But just regular songs, start listening to what they're really telling you. Then you get to work and you're already feeling emotionally down. So, you know, the lack is definitely where the country is at, where a lot of the world is at. But it's a choice whether you want to let it in. It's a choice. It's as big of a choice as what you choose to eat. One is, you know, mental food, and the other is physical food. You don't have to buy into it. And the other thing I would say is, you know, some people want to do the big leap, and some people are what I call woodpeckers.
Mm-hmm.
And woodpeckers are, well, I'm in this job. I need the job. I need to put food on money, food, blah, blah, blah. That's fine. Totally honor that and respect that. And I really love, let's say, writing. And so you pick a little tree called writing, and you start pecking away. And you write for my website, or you write a blog for you, Corinne, mm-hmm. or you, you know, do a little article for your church newspaper about something that you love. But you start pecking away and finding your joy back, mm-hmm. where it's an and world. Totally keep your job. But what will totally transform who you are is when you start tuning into what it is that you really love and want to do. And you see people who are alive, people who are doing what they do, they're not necessarily not also in a job, but they are pole dancing because they love pole dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are, you know, taking care of animals on the weekend because they love animals. I'm very passionate in giving people permission to get back in some form and go, what do I really want to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I know a friend of mine, she has a big job, doesn't particularly like it, doesn't feel it's the right time to leave, but she loves paper. And she's starting, you know, just to sort of draw a few designs, and she's got, you know, 10 different cards, and she's just selling them to people who wants. And she's a big corporate lawyer, but she loves paper and cards.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? Could that potentially become something big? Might she get it into a big, you know, bookstore? Who knows? But she has been transformed because now she feels like she's come alive again. She's not just running her life because she has to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the should energy on top of her.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a wanting, desire energy that's starting to build in her. And that gives you your strength back, your self-esteem back, your love of life back.
Well, isn't when you're in that lack space or the media, I mean, that helps create those stories that we tell ourselves, right? And so, and it gives us more evidence. So we have our beliefs, and then you watch the news and the media, and then that gives you more evidence. Oh, see, I must stay in this job, or, you know, I need to fight, I need to cling on, I need to hang on.
So here's the question I would ask, Corinne, to anyone, which is, so who has your power right now? You know, does the news have your power?
Mm-hmm.
Does your spouse have your power? Do your kids have your power? Do your friends have your power? Do your parents have your power? A lot of the times our parents have our power. There's no way I'm going to leave this big job because my parents, blah, 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 spent all their life and money and got me to college, and I'm an accountant, so I've got to stay an accountant. That would be the definition of your parents having your power.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times, someone or something has your power, and you need to know where it is to go get it back.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you've lost it.
Because
mm-hmm. we're so much more powerful. But if we give our power to the news, or if we give our power to, you know, our friends who live and think a certain way, then that's who we start becoming. I mean, just to give you a sense of the importance of who you let into your space. It's one of the principles
mm-hmm.
in the book. Who's on your change support team?
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, it's not your closest friends and family. They do not want to see you change.
Mm-hmm.
They are not up for the roller coaster ride. They feel threatened if you start, you know, to potentially mention the D word, divorce, or the I'm going to change jobs word.
Mm-hmm.
Because it brings up a whole bunch of things for them. And it's not even about you. It's just that's sort of how they are. And so when you go through change, first of all, find someone who has already made the change you want to make. You know, a lot of the times we assume we've got to know how to get through something, how to deal with, you know, a parent who's been diagnosed. You aren't supposed to know that. So find someone who's been through the change. And the other thing I would say is be totally open to life bringing brand new people into your space
mm-hmm.
who are going to see you for who you are today. They're not going to remind you that you tried to lose weight 17 times and you're not going to it's not going to happen. Even just energetically, they're not going to remind you, because all they're going to see is your courage, your intention, and what the changes that you're intending to make. And, you know, if you're being a friend to someone going through change, you know, believe that they can change. And want that change for them. A lot of times, I don't know how to help my friend through change. Just already see them having made the change. You don't need the plan. You know, change is not about actions. Change is really not about, well, how do I actually do it? When you get obsessed with the why you want to do it, why do you
mm-hmm.
want to change jobs? Why do you want a better relationship? Not how am I going to do it? Our obsession is about the how. When you are obsessed with the why, things start opening up. Like I didn't know how I was going to, you know, do anything after I left all my jobs. But I was obsessed with the why. Why? I must do work that matters. And I still do to this day. And when I have a bad day, that's what gets me back up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I know why I do what I do. Do I know how I do it? No. And do I know what I do and by when I'm going to do it? And do I have impossible deadlines? No. But I take care of the intention behind why it's important. You know, let's take losing weight. Why do some people lose weight? Because they have a really strong reason why. All women can lose weight before their weddings. Why? Because they have a strong why. Why can women stop smoking when they're pregnant? They have a strong reason why. They didn't know how to do it before, but now they have a why. So you need your why.
Mm-hmm.
Not how am I going to put money on the table. Why must you start pursuing this dream or learn this craft or take care of your health or whatever it might be?
So do you feel more freedom now than when you were in this big corporate job with this big life?
Freedom, for me, is probably the thing I feel the most of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not freedom to wake up when I want or freedom to, you know, do what I want. Because I still feel, you know, a level of intensity of work and commitment and very full days. So it's not, oh, Ariane hangs out in Soho and has, you know, long lunches.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a freedom of being exactly who I want to be. Because my inner world and outer world are totally aligned. And I feel an integrity. I don't feel I'm lying to anyone anymore. I think, you know, when you are transparent, when you're authentic, there's no pretending, there's no mask. There's no like, oh, I want Corinne to think that my business is doing really well. There's just none of that going on. Because there's no, you're sort of, who you are is who you're being in the world. And for a lot of people, who they are is this, you know, beautiful, creative, energetic, inspiring, excited, passionate soul. But who they're being in the world, you would never know that. Because they, you know, something has taken their freedom away. A belief, a person, a story they're telling themselves, why they still need to stay in jail. So freedom, you know, to me, the ultimate freedom is freedom from your mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's not freedom from a person. It's not freedom from you know, a city you don't like or a condition that you're in health-wise. The ultimate freedom is freedom from your mind. And my biggest work right now, my biggest internal work, is trying to free myself from two programs that kind of run the mind. One is the disapproval program, and the other is the perfection program.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have a comparison program going on, which wasn't really my thing. But I watch my disapproving mind every minute of every day. It is minute by minute work. And whenever, you know, the average person disapproves themselves 50 to 55 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
I wore the wrong thing. My hair is this. Everyone is always focused on what's wrong. I should have worn heels instead of this, whatever. And I said the wrong thing, I shouldn't have said this, I didn't say this at the meeting, blah, 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 blah. 50 to 55 times a day. So that is not freedom. That is not freedom. When your mind is doing that to you on a daily basis, you are not free.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the ultimate freedom is looking at the mind, realizing that I am not my mind. You know, my mind did not create me. Something else created me. My mind is not what creates the most beautiful things that happen in my life. My mind is not going to create my soulmate. Something else is going to attract and magnetize that to me. So I, you know, it's my daily work. I watch that disapproval mind, and I love it. I don't fight it. I notice it. I treat it like this, you know, scared child. And I go, thank you, mind. Yep, thanks for thinking about that. I'm going to take over from here. But it's sweet. It's not, oh, my God, I can't believe I beat myself up 20 times about this already. You know, I'll come off stage, I'll come off TV, and I used to have 100 things I disapproved of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Wore the wrong lipstick, the wrong earrings, I should have said this, I didn't say this, I didn't mention this, I didn't. When you start taking control of the disapproval mind, you will start feeling free. And you know, we shouldn't believe everything that we think. Just because we think it doesn't mean it's true.
Well, Ariane, I appreciate you being so candid about that, because I think so often what happens with, you know, what people look at you is they go, well, she's beautiful. She's smart. Look at her. She's very successful. Of course, it's all perfect for her, right? When we're in everybody else's business and we put these stories on what's really going on. And when you're so candid about, you know, all these thoughts that go on. I mean, one of the things with my coaching clients that I work with is just being a compassionate observer in your life, being a watcher instead of this
exactly
judger.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yes. I'm never going to get rid of the mind, kill the mind, want the mind to go away.
Mm-hmm.
But I am very sweet and loving. When I start seeing the voice, it's going to go, oh, here are 10 things you should have done differently or better or said at the date or when you met this guy for this meeting. Or it doesn't go away. But I'm loving towards it, as opposed to adding one more disapproval on top of that. I mean, I did not set any New Year's resolutions this year, you know, and that's a whole other subject around New Year's resolutions. But my only intention for the year was to start freeing myself from that disapproving voice. And I'm more gentle with myself, with others, with life, with how things are showing up. It's radical, the amount of freedom that you can get when you start pull it out of your blind spot. You're not even aware that you're doing it. And when you start being aware, that's when you start being awake. You go, I can't believe my mind is telling me this again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good enough. I'm not thin enough. I'm not. Because when you change what you say to yourself about yourself, mm-hmm. your entire life changes. It's not about the economy changes. It's what you need to change about what you're saying to yourself. Why, you know, 99% of people look in the mirror, they focus on what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I make myself look in the mirror and fully love and acknowledge some of the things I see. Of course my mind's going to go, ooh, what about this? What about that? But there's a strength and an energy that's now moving towards looking for what's right. And because your mind is a creative instrument, when you look for what's right, more right shows up. Your mind is the most creative instrument. People who think they're not creative, mm-hmm. if you have a mind, you are creating.
Just this morning before I came on the air, I was coaching a client on the phone, and this is exactly what we were talking about. You know, she beats herself up so much, and her word that she uses is always only. Oh, it's only that much money, or it's only this. It's only, so it's her way of stopping herself. So it's like, well, why try? Because I'm going to fail. And in the way she just and realizing just that one word that she puts into her sentence structure is what's really holding her back.
And I love that you said that, because another principle in the book that I found was that people who are good at change have very different language. They have different language. They have different questions that they ask themselves. People who are good at change do not use words like only or disaster or horrific day or worst day ever or nightmare of a week. Very different people. So whatever those words are for you, those words are part of you keeping you kind of stuck in that place. And if you don't know what your words are, your friends know your words. I know exactly what words, and your friends also know your great words. I mean, I know a guy who says the word fantastic in every other sentence, and his life is fantastic. I don't think it started that way, but that is his word, or the word awesome, or the word, you know, everything's beautiful. So all they see is beauty.
Mm-hmm. Well,
we have a negative word also that's kind of running the show.
I just remember when my daughter, who's now 10, was born, and I was not one of the women who were just so into having babies. I finally decided that I was willing and wanting to be a mom. And so I had a baby, and I was just fell in love with her. And then I looked at my husband. I'm like, oh, my goodness, everybody's having babies. Look at this. Look at all these babies, because all of a sudden my mind was open to babies. Where in the past, I wasn't interested. And even now, I don't see babies as often because that's just not part of my world. You know, and that's where, you know, this is like a story sometimes I tell my clients when they kind of think what I'm talking about is a bit woo-woo. And then they're like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, because it's something that is, whether it's a book or a movie, when you're not used to it or it's not brought into your world, it's not brought into your brain, you don't notice it. But then once you do, you see it everywhere. And that's the same thing with the words, whether it's fantastic or beautiful. When you start to see things that way, you see more of the same.
Absolutely. I mean, I was coaching a woman who's 50 who wanted to pursue her dreams, and she went, she wrote a book about 50-year-olds taking sabbaticals and finally doing what they wanted. But I said to her, I said, start looking for women in their 50s who are doing what they love. And within a week, she had 17 who had shown up, and she had never seen one before. They
wow.
were there.
Wow. That's great. This is Corinne Motokaitis, and thanks for listening to How She Really Does It. We have Ariane de Bonvoisin. She's the author of First 30 Days, and also her website is first30days.com. And as we're wrapping up, I want to talk about some takeaways. And you've been amazing, because not only do you have, you know, just the language, and but you also have the practicality. I mean, you've already given us so many tips. And what are a couple tips? I think one area that we didn't get quite to was the support, because you had talked about that. And how essential is the support, and how do we find that support?
Every single person I've ever interviewed that got through change had at least one person that helped them get through the change. And when you're in a place of, I'm the only one going through this change, no one else has ever felt this way or gone through these three changes at once, that's when things start to slow down. So whoever and whatever it is, look at, well, who is in my life who wants me to change, believes I can change? Like, when I have a bad day at work, I don't call my parents, you know, because I know they're just going to add to the bad day and add to the fear and add to the concern. I will call a very different type person who loves me, believes in me, and only sees good things and beauty and success for me and around me. But I do not speed dial one of my parents. And sometimes we're like, oh, I should just call my spouse. And you know what? Sometimes that's not the right person. So start just being mindful of, like, who's the one who's going to lift you through maybe a tough time, maybe a wonderful time. You know, takeaways, I mean, for me, I'll tell you my two or three what I call non-negotiables. And everyone needs to get what their non-negotiables are. This is something that nothing and no one interferes with. No man, no woman, your family, your kids, your job, nothing interferes with. My health, my spiritual path. No one touches my health. If I've not done something for my health every day, and it could be I've made sure I've drank all the water I need to drink, or had some healthy oils, or had a green juice, or had some avocado, or gone to yoga. It could be one or a combination of them, but I must do something for my health. If I don't, I'm snappy, I'm impatient, I'm not loving, I'm not kind, I'm off, I'm empty. And so no one benefits. So I've said no to big things and big meetings because I needed my own time. Mm-hmm. And I show up better, and I'm a happier person, and I'm, you know, more loving everything, friend, partner, etc. And my spiritual path, you know, it's everything from I need alone time. I need 5, 10, 15 minutes. And sometimes my alone time, if I really can't get it, I put my iTunes on, I put a certain type of music, and then I just kind of spend some time being. Because, as I said, you know, you've heard this throughout the show, because my inner life is so directing things, I need to feel like I'm giving it some space. I'm giving it time to talk to me. I'm listening to my intuition. You know, does the deal feel wrong? I actually need to check in and know that. Is my stomach tight and contracted? Have I been eating too much today? Then clearly something's a bit off. Mm-hmm. Have I been sleeping enough? You know, I do. I take time to go to retreats. I read certain types of books. Because that, to me, is where I get my safety. When mm-hmm. I know I'm in my body, and that I know that, you know, spiritually I'm being aligned and assisted, and love is sort of present, those two are non-negotiables. And I find a lot of people, they need to kind of go, well, what is my non-negotiable? And it means putting yourself on the list. A lot of people will say, my kids are my non-negotiables. Mm-hmm. Well, they are, and if you're unhealthy or you have nothing to give or you haven't taken care of yourself, your kids are not getting what they need from you. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of research to show that the number one thing children need is for their parents to be happy. It's not for their parents to be around all the time. It's not for even their parents to be together. It's for the parent to be happy. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it's sort of like, you know, light bulbs go off and kind of go, so you must do what you need to do to be happy. And to me, those two are my non-negotiables. Mm-hmm. But figure out what they are for you, and you don't negotiate them out. And especially for men listening, most people are like, my family is a non-negotiable. You negotiate your family all the time because work comes first, and you don't pick up when your wife calls, or you come home late, or you work at weekends. So a lot of men say, oh, my family is non-negotiable. And when you really get down to it, they negotiate that one all the time. And it's fine. It's totally fine. You know, there's no judgment in that. It's just getting clear on, well, what is your non-negotiable? Is your work your non-negotiable? Mm-hmm. Well, then that's what you're going to get a lot more of, as opposed to something else that might be calling and longing for you.
And then what do you recommend for those who do want to take the leap? They want to take the leap from I could say corporate prisoner to entrepreneur. What do you recommend? What are some practical steps for them to take?
I would start doing something about what you love while you're still in your current job. Take a class, read a book, find other entrepreneurs in the space, get a website domain, get a trademark, bring three friends together to brainstorm at home about it. A lot of people make the big leap before, and then it's really, they feel they're in the void. Mm-hmm. There's so much you can do while you're still in a particular position.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it's not, I need to have the perfect plan before I do it either. I've got to have all my ducks lined up. But definitely feel, when you get close to a new environment, soon enough you start feeling part of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
When you're just looking at a new thing or observing it from a distance, there's still a lot of sort of journeying to get towards that and to start being it. So I would say, pick up a book about it. Find 3-4 people who've done something similar. Ask them, what it was like, what mistakes they made, what to avoid, what to do differently. I'm not a believer in putting big deadlines ever on yourself. Decisions feel right. I don't know if it's going to feel right on May 15th or September 15th. Decisions feel right.
Mm-hmm.
You can force feed it like people do on the 1st of January, and 80% of people don't. That doesn't work for them.
Mm-hmm.
But decisions feel right. So, and the other thing is I would really set a very strong intention and figure out why you want to make the leap.
Mm-hmm.
And I would reaffirm it not once, not twice. I would reaffirm it several times a day.
So wouldn't it be make the leap because I hate my job?
But that's not a why. You see what I mean? That's not a why. That's sort of the past that's mm-hmm. sort of trying to engage the future.
Yeah, it's the why to leave, but it's not the why of where you want to go.
Exactly. You will get where you want to go because of what you're focusing on.
And then what about a financial? Because there is the internet out and it is, it is so much cheaper now to start a website and to do so many things. But do you recommend that people kind of build like a safety net or be able to bootstrap so that they're not into this area of lack where they don't need to make the next dollar the next day?
You're right. There are so many ways of doing things cheaply. I find nowadays what's going on is there's a whole culture of people bartering things for each other. So
mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. I will do a couple hours of life coaching for someone, and someone will design my logo.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no exchange
mm-hmm.
of money, right? Or, I have a really good friend who's a personal trainer. He trains me, and, I've done a bunch of things for him, on a professional side.
Mm-hmm.
So find things that you are and you have, and start looking for ways to barter it if it really is a financial issue.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is looking for work right now. So whether it's a graphic designer or, anything, a babysitter, everything is negotiable. Everything is negotiable. Things are going for actually a lot cheaper. So businesses, it's much easier, quicker, cheaper to start a business nowadays because people do want the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I would say, too, is what has completely transformed what I do, how I do it, for people who don't know what it is that they want to do next, find a way to serve. Find a way to take away a problem. Find a way to contribute. Find a way to take away people's pain. And it could be anything. It could be helping college, it could be helping college kids find a job. It could be, I have a friend of mine who just started dog walking. But she's taking away someone's pain who has a dog who's working, and, it's a problem, and people are willing to pay if you take away a problem. So I would walk around and go, I'm going to identify 5 problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to identify maybe sort of how it is that I can help. But I find that, whether it's money, whether it's power, if you are aligned with something that you want to give, people are willing to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to get something from people, people are getting too smart nowadays, It's like, what is it that sort of you want to give to people? Not, I'm trying to get money from people. I do a ton of stuff for free. I write articles for free. Because to me, it's sort of the more the energy is going outwards, because of the law of karma, because of the law of giving and receiving, clearly I'm going to be in the receiving mode as well.
Well, Ariane, thank you so much for coming back again. It's been a pleasure.
Anytime, Corinne. Thank you so much.
This is Corinne Motokaitis, and that was Ariane de Bonvoisin. She is the author of The First 30 Days, and her website is first30days.com. Thanks for listening to How She Really Does It at KDRT LP 95.7 FM.